Blog Talk Radio.
How's everybody's day going? I got a lot of fun stuff to talk about today, also a lot of serious stuff to talk about today. I'm going to kick it off with some good news in just a second. Then I am going to take you diving into an ocean of polling data. I have the most admired man of 2015, the most admired woman of 2015. I have some information on the dissatisfaction of the American people with their government. That's a really interesting story. That's from CNN ORC. Then later on in the show, we got Donald Trump is perhaps more extreme than a former KKK Grand Wizard, according to a former KKK Grand Wizard. So there's a lot to say about that story. Then later on in the show, true to form and true to the name of the show, we have a whole bunch of stuff on religion. Unfortunately, we have what appears to be a crazy Christian woman in Arizona murdering somebody for God and then keeping the body as a shrine because, you know, you got to be moral, and that's how you're moral. And we have ISIS goes into detail about why they take the sex slaves they take, and exactly how you're supposed to treat them. So that's immensely depressing, but we're going to discuss it, along with many other things. But first, let's go ahead and kick it off here with some positive news. This is something that I'm very happy to talk about. Okay. So I'm honored to report to you guys that you did it. You guys put me on your shoulders and ran across the finish line and voted me the Atheist of the Year in the social media category. At Godless Utopia on Twitter did this awesome, I guess, match? No, that's not the best word for it. He did this awesome competition or contest where he put together, or I should say they put together, a list of leading atheists in various categories, activist, author, social media, and I believe one or two others, and they determined, okay, you know, who's the best, democratically vote on it, and you can determine who the leader is for the year of 2015. So after I did that segment yesterday, you guys fucking unleashed the hounds of hell on them, and with 64% of the vote, we ended up winning. We came in second to, or the person who came in second, I should say, haha, funny Freudian slip, is Godless Spellchecker, a guy by the name of Stephen Knight. All credit to that dude. In all seriousness, he would have won if I didn't come out here and do the segment and ask you guys to vote for me, because I was at, I think it's 47% before I did the segment. And then when I did the segment, you know, on YouTube, our numbers are absurd. On Twitter, they're not that great, to be honest. He has way more on Twitter. So as a result of that, you guys flooded in there and voted me number one by quite a bit. So, but check out his podcast if you haven't. I'm not just saying it. I've heard from a lot of good people who I trust that it is a fantastic podcast. So definitely check that out if you haven't yet. But now we are officially in the finals for Atheist of the Year. We won Atheist of the Year in the social media category, which is a separate thing, but now we're up against the author category, the activist category, and one other. I believe it's down to myself, Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Raif Badawi. Now, in this vote, I want to implore everybody to choose Raif Badawi. I came out here yesterday and shamelessly plugged myself and said, please vote for me for the social media category. But in all seriousness, for the broader category of just Atheist of the Year, he's a true hero. I'm a jackass who's doing the functional equivalent of barking at pine cones on the internet, whereas this guy was actually in harm's way, and he was making a case for secularism and rationality and liberalism in Saudi Arabia, where, socially speaking, there's none of that, and they don't even tolerate open dissent, and they don't tolerate people who have a differing opinion. I mean, we covered stories before on Saudi Arabia about how they outlawed liberal interpretations of Islam. So even the reformers from within the faith who are saying, hey, let's, you know, be really modern and humanist in our approach while still being religious, they say, nope, we're not even going to allow that. We only allow ultra-conservative interpretations and a Salafi interpretation of Islam. They also, of course, say atheists are terrorists. Raif Badawi, for those of you who don't know the story, he's a Saudi Arabian activist, and he created the website Free Saudi Liberals. So he's a liberal in Saudi Arabia, and he was arrested in 2012 on a charge of insulting Islam. I mean, think about how incredible that is. If that was something that could get me locked up or anybody locked up in an American context, or, I mean, not only would I be in jail, I would have been given the death sentence 172 times over. I mean, I do a segment that's against Islam probably on a daily basis, a segment that's against Christianity on a daily basis, a segment that's against, you know, Jewish extremism or the extremism of the Israeli government. I do segments on that often. The idea that open criticism of, you know, whether it's a state, a government, or a religious doctrine or belief system, the idea that that gets you in trouble to the point where they lock you in a cage or potentially worse, I mean, that's something that's just fundamentally anti-freedom. It's against civil liberties. It's against human rights. And it's one thing for me to do it in a New York context where in this realm there's little to no consequences. But for him to do it in Saudi Arabia, I mean, that really takes balls. And I'd love to sit here and say to you guys, no, I would be doing it as well if I was in Saudi Arabia, but I'd be lying if I said that. I don't know. If I was in that context, would I be that brave? Again, I want to say yeah, but I don't know if that's true. Perhaps if you put me in that context, I'd, you know, understandably and justifiably be a closeted atheist and secularist because I would fear for my own safety. This is somebody who really put their ass on the line and they're suffering the consequences, and this is a principled stand that's, you know, being punished. So he was convicted in 2013 and sentenced to 7 years in prison and 600 lashes. In 2014, his sentence was increased. As the world was saying, decrease it, let him out. Saudi Arabia increased it to 10 years in prison and 1,000 lashes. I think so far he's gotten 20 lashes or 50 lashes. And then they had to call it off or postpone it, and they kept postponing it because he was in such bad health. And the lashes did so much damage that doctors said, if you whip him again, he's just going to die from the lashes. So this is an amazing price to pay, and this is somebody who really is a true hero who's standing up for liberalism and freedom and civil rights in the context of a society that says we're not even going to tolerate you discussing it, never mind tolerating you, you know, implementing it or changing the structure of government and the system to make it better. So again, this is a true hero, and I also, while I'm out of here, I want to give a mention to all of the Bangladeshi bloggers who are secular bloggers, and some of them were atheists, some of them were just secular, but a number of them were hacked to death in 2015. So in all seriousness, it feels wrong to even consider giving, you know, somebody like myself or Richard Dawkins or Sam Harris some kind of an award for being a brave atheist, when in our context it's so much easier to just say, like, oh yeah, we're against irrational dogmatic mythology and stupid shit like that. If people are doing it in a society where there's many more fundamentalists and the structure of government is wholly set against them, now in Bangladesh it's a little different, it's officially a secular state, but there's an increasing Islamist movement and they're very dangerous, clearly, to do it in that context is so much harder. And there's no comparison between what I do, or what, and not to put down Richard or Sam, but what they do and what these guys do, you know, this is it takes an extra level of bravery to do what they do. So Abhijit Roy, hacked to death by Islamists in Bangladesh, secular blogger, Oyasikar Rahman, Ananta Bijoy Das, Niloy Neal, and Faisal Dipan, these are all people who were secular bloggers who were macheted to death in Bangladesh, some of them in broad daylight in the middle of the street in 2015. And these are the real heroes because they're the ones who are really swimming against the tide. I mean, look, we're still, you know, a minority in the U.S. and in the West, largely speaking, but our numbers are growing, and it's much safer for us to criticize it here. 20% of the U.S. identifies as non-religious or unaffiliated. They're in the nuns category, so they're not part of an organized religion. So it's a much more open environment, even though we're still a minority and even though there's still discrimination. This is true heroism. So I want everybody who voted for me in the last round, and I'm honored that I'm social media atheist of the year, but vote for Raif Badawi in the finals here for just atheist man of the year, because he deserves it way more than I'll ever deserve it. And, you know, it takes a real special person to do what he did and suffer these consequences. And not enough people are speaking up on behalf of him. We all need to speak up on behalf of him and let people know this isn't a debatable issue. This isn't like, hey, there's two sides of it. No, 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 there's not two sides of it. One side are the grotesque, disgusting oppressors who take away rights, and the other side is somebody who's using freedom of speech and freedom of expression to fight for liberal values and people's rights and human rights. So, you know, it's not something that we should even be nuanced about, because this is an area where nuance is not merited. Would you be nuanced in saying, hey, was Martin Luther King right or the KKK? No, you say Martin Luther King is right. End of conversation. Same thing here with Raif Badawi versus the Saudi government. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. And I just want to say one more time here, Godless Spellchecker, who came in second in the Social Media of the Year award, he would have won if I didn't do a YouTube segment saying, hey, guys, could you please vote for me? Because he has a much bigger Twitter following, and he has a loyal fan base as well. And I just want to let everybody know, if I didn't do the segment, he would have won. I had 47% in the polls before I did the segment, and you guys flooded it and made me win. So check out his podcast if you haven't. I've heard fantastic things. And thanks again for voting me Social Media Atheist of the Year. But for Atheist of the Year, Atheist Man of the Year, let's all vote for Raif Badawi. Okay. Let me now, that's some happy news. Yay, happy, happy, joy, joy. Let's move on to some polling data here. We're going to give you the best people. Is that the right word? Favorite people? Most admired people? There you go. Most admired man and woman of 2015. Admired man and woman poll of 2015, and I want to give you the results here. So number five for the women is Carly Fiorina. Okay, no. that's my commentary on that. No. There's a story out today as well on Carly Fiorina where she attacks Hillary Clinton for playing the woman card. Anybody know why that's fucked up? Bueller. We've covered stories where Carly Fiorina plays the woman card, where she does old quotes from like Margaret Thatcher or somebody. It's like, if you want somebody to talk, ask a man. If you want somebody to actually get the job done, ask a woman. She gives that smug look, and the audience is like, yeah, It's a Republican audience too, so they're definitely not going to be like, yeah, women. They're like, yeah, get in the kitchen. What? Did I say that out loud? But okay, you're playing the woman card. She's done it very clearly before, like not even, hey, let's interpret this differently. No, there is no other interpretation. She's played the woman card, and she's like, okay, why is Hillary playing the woman card? So I don't like that, if you can't tell. And what this tells me is, you know, there are many better choices among the female community. Sounds weird, feels weird saying that, since I think they're over 50% of the population. And to pick her is like a disservice to other women. And she was a horrible CEO, so this isn't just me against her as a politician, which I am. It's also me against her in terms of what she did before that. She's repeatedly ranked one of the worst CEOs of all time, like in official lists. So not a good choice. Number four, Michelle Obama. That is understandable. I mean, some would argue, hey, she's the first lady. You know, she's not. Is this really somebody who we're holding up as a leader when she's the wife of the president? I don't really think that's a fair criticism because she's, you know, highlighted a lot of issues that are really common sense issues and very important. You know, for example, she says, hey, maybe we shouldn't let our kids be fat asses. Should they eat right and exercise? I'm just saying. You know, this is something that's a positive thing. You know, you can say this is having a good impact. She's beloved across the U.S. and the world views her the same way. Number three is Oprah Winfrey. Oprah is still coasting off of her massive success from the 1980s and 1990s. I guess she has her own network now as well. Malala Yousafzai is number two. I always want her at number one. I think she's tremendous. I think that she's – it's almost like caricature of a good person. Like, she's the perfect person to the point where you want to pinch yourself. And you're like, is this real? Like, are you serious? I mean, somebody from, what is it, rural Pakistan who was shot in the face by the Taliban because she cared about spreading the message of women's education, and then after she does it, she's like, yeah, I will now double down, and I will now beat you because I'm right and you're wrong, and you can't beat me in the realm of ideas. That's why you resorted to violence. So step aside as I win all these awards and spread the message even more, and you just made me more powerful. You don't even know it. You don't even know it. So, again, I always want her at number one. The number one most admired woman, Hillary Clinton. Fuck me with a cactus. Okay, that's... I hate it. I think I even hate it more than Carly Fiorina at number five. Because Hillary Clinton is, I mean, establishment 101, elitist 101. I mean, the amount of money she's taken for her career in corporate donations and the amount of favors they've done back, the entire Clinton family, the amount of favors they've given back to CEOs and other world governments, it's unreal. The entire Clinton Foundation, guys, there were stories that broke that we covered on the show within the past year of the Clinton Foundation taking money from other governments around the world for the, you know, to do charitable stuff. So that aspect you could say fantastic, but they take the money from the world governments, and then Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State, would turn around and give these governments weapons contracts for billions of dollars. And we're talking unsavory characters here too. I mean, for example, Saudi Arabia was on the list. You know, Saudi head officials in the Saudi government giving them money, and they turn around and give them more weapons. There was favoritism across the board. Hillary Clinton, another story that broke within this year, she worked with Elizabeth Warren before Elizabeth Warren was a politician, and Elizabeth Warren was trying to lobby her to vote against a bill that would skew the bankruptcy laws and rig the bankruptcy laws in favor of the corporations. So Hillary Clinton voted the right way when working with Elizabeth Warren, and then a few months later, a year or so later, the bill came up again, and she voted for it. Because she takes so much money from Wall Street. She takes so much money from the corporations. She's beholden to all of these big interests. Now, don't get me wrong. Is Hillary Clinton right on gay marriage now? Yes. Is she right on abortion and Planned Parenthood? Yes. Is she better than fucking Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum? Absolutely. I'm not even entertaining that conversation. Those guys are a buffoon in every sense of the word. There are some issues where I agree with Hillary Clinton. But she is part and parcel of this grotesque, corrupt system. And, you know, the reason why she's number one and she's most admired is simply because she's a figurehead and she's hoisted in that spotlight. But the reason she's in the spotlight is because she sells out to all the people who are in power. And she now is the establishment. She is the system. So I don't like that. I think it's horrific. And I think that, you know, this speaks to the sorry state of affairs that we have today, where number one most admired woman is Hillary Clinton, who's a corporate puppet. No, I'd much rather have Elizabeth Warren. I'd much rather have Malala Yousafzai. There are so many women that are much more admirable than Hillary Clinton. And by the way, just to throw it out there real quick, Elizabeth Warren did register here. She got 1%, which puts her in a tie for eighth And then also, Sarah Palin's in that tie for eight. Yet again, I repeat myself, fuck me with a cactus. And Ellen DeGeneres is tied with Sarah Palin. I would put her way above Sarah Palin, even though she, you know, is a TV host. So now we'll move on to the men. Bill Gates, number five, for obvious reasons. You could argue changed the world in many ways. Bernie Sanders, number four. Yoo-hoo! We have Donald Trump ahead of Bernie Sanders. Find me that cactus again. This is a new thing I just made up now. Fuck me with a cactus. I'm not sure if I'm feeling it. Literally, I wouldn't like the way it feels. Pope Francis is number two. Actually, wrong. He's tied with Trump. They both got 5%. And number one is Barack Obama. I don't like that either. I mean, look, the number one most admired man, here's my general rule of thumb. Your number one most admired man cannot call for drone strikes. Cannot be responsible for the deaths of civilians. Sorry, I'm wacky like that. And again, it's not, I mean, yes, can we sit here and go through the positive things Obama's done? Sure. The Iran deal, the Cuba deal, thumbs up, I'm with him. The executive order on immigration, thumbs up, I'm with you. Stimulus package, I'm with you. Obamacare, I preferred single payer, but it was a step in the right direction, so I'm with you. So, like, I can point to many things where I say, you know what, obviously better than if we had another Republican. But, no, I'm not going to sit here and say, you're the most admired man in the world, or you should be, when you expanded NSA spying. I'm not going to sit here and say that when you increased our involvement in Afghanistan. I'm not going to sit here and say that when you're doing a drone war that many legal experts say is wildly illegal and unconstitutional. We're doing military interventions in seven different countries. I'm sorry, I can't say that that person should be the number one most admired in the world. For a variety of reasons, you know, I wouldn't begrudge him being on the list, of course, but being number one, no, I can't have that. So that's the overall breakdown here. You guys make of it whatever you'd like. As you can tell, I have strong opinions as usual. I'm going to do one more here. This one is polling data as well. Let's do it. There's a new CNN ORC poll out on disfatisfaction, blah, 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 blah. Let me try that again. There's a new CNN ORC poll out on dissatisfaction with government in America. And the numbers are pretty telling. So 75% of the American people overall are dissatisfied with the government. That's so – I mean, we're talking about a democracy, a constitutional republic, and a representative democracy. If 75% of people within that system are saying, nah, I'm not happy, there's something wrong with the system. Perhaps it's not functioning as it was meant to function. I'll get more into that in a second here, but 75% overall are dissatisfied. Among Republicans, 90%. Now, some people will point out, and they're right to point this out, that that has a lot to do with the fact that we have a Democratic administration in there. If you change the administrations and put a Republican in there and a Democrat out, well, then I'm sure the Democrats would say, as a higher number, I don't know why I'm having trouble speaking today, that, yeah, we're more dissatisfied than the Republicans are. So, still, it is what it is here, 90%. That's a lot. Then we go to Trump voters. I mean, this is, among Trump voters, 97%. 97% say, yeah, I'm dissatisfied with government. Tells you everything you need to know. They look at Trump and they see an anti-establishment figure. Now, that's not true for a number of reasons. He's a billionaire. He's a capitalist buffoon. His daddy was worth hundreds of millions of dollars. He tried to get money from other billionaires when he ran, even though he said, no, I didn't do that. These guys are all puppets of the billionaires. He only said that after they rejected him. That's a fact. We covered it on the show. So they just view him as anti-establishment, even though he's not. And as a result of that, they say he's the answer. He's got to be the answer. He's tapping into something, and the mainstream politicians, the elite, the establishment, they don't get it. They don't see it. They're all wholly convinced there's no way he can win. Now, I'm not saying he's going to win, but it's his race to lose. You have to understand that. So his over-the-top confidence and bravado and arrogance is something that people like. And the fact that he says everything at once. He says insanely far right-wing things that are meat to the base, and he says randomly, hey, let's do infrastructure spending and get people jobs. It's like, what the fuck? That's liberal. But they like that. Even the Republican base likes that. Who doesn't want a job, right, if they're out of work and they need work? And he says stuff like, you know, the corruption's the problem. These guys are all puppets. So, again, he says that he wants to partake in that system, but they say no to him. The donors reject him. So by him calling that out, people say, that guy's for me, I'm with him. So he's using genuine dissatisfaction with government to his advantage. You need somebody like Bernie Sanders on the left to tap into that populist emotion, feeling people have, because it's right, it's true, it's based on facts, they are getting fucked, the system is rigged against them, and you need somebody on the left to run with that. And thankfully we have somebody who is doing that this time around. It's Bernie Sanders. You wouldn't want to leave, disaffected populist base and segment of the population to vote for Trump, because God forbid it was Trump versus all polished, seasoned, super fake politicians. Trump would have an even better chance of winning, and that's a really scary thought. Okay, let me take a break now. When I come back, speaking of Trump, a former KKK Grand Wizard weighs in on Trump. And then we're going to get to where the Republicans and Obama differ on foreign policy. There's a great article out about that today. Stay right there.
Mama and her daddy with the baby in the back seat. 50 miles to go, she was running low on faith and gasoline. It's been a long, hard year. She had a lot on her mind and she didn't pay attention. She was going away too fast. Before she knew it, she was spinning on a thin black sheet of glass. She saw both her lives flash before her eyes. Time to cry, she was so scared. She threw her hands up in the air. Jesus, take the wheel, take it from my hands, 'cause I can't do this on my own. I'm letting go, but give me one more chance. Take me.
Son of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys.
Here we go. A former KKK Grand Wizard, David Duke, spoke about Donald Trump in a recent interview. And he actually said that Trump goes too far sometimes, even for him. Can we just reflect for a second here on the term Grand Wizard? I know I've mentioned this before, but if you want the world to take you seriously, perhaps you don't come up with ridiculous terms like, I'll be the Grand Wizard. Do you want to be the Grand Dragon? What's next? Grand Pooba? Grand fill-in-the-blank with some random Harry Potter character? How do you think that makes you sound tough or smart or like your group is somehow, you know, hey, don't you want to join us? We have wizards. Yeah, we do. Next, we're going to have Grand Pokemon. You want to get in on this? You sound like children. But then again, if you want people to join your group, you probably shouldn't. But anyway, I digress. So, little shocking. I mean, the former KKK Grand Wizard. And it's not like he's totally reformed. I need to make that clear because, you know, he says, oh, yeah, no, but I left a long time ago. But then when you hear everything he says, it's clear that his sympathies still lie with those kinds of movements. I mean, he founded some sort of, you know, U.S. group that fights for the rights of white European men. Now, theoretically, of course, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm in favor of rights for European white men. I'm in favor of rights for everybody. But what that disregards is history and where we're at already. You know, this is I know we speak about this constantly, and some people get mad at me when I bring it up, but it's true, which is why I bring it up. You know, if you call for white pride in America, is that the same thing as calling for black pride in America? Come on, if you say, yeah, you're just being silly, like you're being purposefully dense. Black pride movements are historically tied to the civil rights movement and fighting back against a racist structure of government, a white supremacist system that was in place in the South when there was segregation. White pride is historically tied to white supremacy. So, don't do the false equivalence. If you invoke that, it is indeed false equivalence on this front. So his sympathies still lie there, and he loves blaming the Jews for absolutely everything. I mean, I watched the interview recently where he spoke to TYT. Cenk had a talk with David Duke. Why? I don't know. But everything came back to the damn Jews, huh? You know, those goddamn Jews, man. They're controlling everything behind the scene. Jews, Jews, Jews. And then Cenk would bring up a point about how, okay, so you're talking about Wall Street and this and that. He would bring up specific people who are not Jewish, and then he'd go, yeah, that's the exception. And he would keep bringing up examples. He'd be like, no, but the Jews, biggest anti-Semite in the world. So here's exactly what he said about Trump. Quote, as far as what I see, according to the candidates that are out there now, Republicans and Democrats, I think he's head and shoulders right now above the rest. I don't agree with everything he says. He speaks a little more, actually speaks a lot more radically than I talk. And I think that's a positive and a negative. Damn. I mean, that's quite the comment. Now, is it true? No, I in all seriousness, I don't think it's true. I mean, I despise Trump with a burning passion. But, yeah, I think he's better than KKK, Grand Dragons, Wizards, Pikachus, whatever the fuck they are. I would trust him more. That's not saying I trust him. There's a big difference here. But I think he'd be better than those guys. But just the fact that a former KKK guy is saying that does tell you something about how extreme some of Trump's rhetoric really is. So what exactly is he referring to? He doesn't make it clear. But, you know, if you had to speculate, maybe he's talking about Trump's ban on all Muslims from entering the U.S. And there's a number of other things, but in the case of David Duke, he hates the Jews so much that he might have, like, an alliance out of convenience with fundamentalist Muslims who also hate the Jews. So it's more like, you know, I don't hate all Muslims because a lot of them don't like the Jews, so I'm with them on that. So perhaps that's what he's referring to, or maybe he's talking about Trump's outright call for targeting civilians in the Middle East, or his call to torture, quote, even if it doesn't work, or his retweeting of neo-Nazi propaganda. And again, at this point, he claims to have, you know, I no longer associate with the KKK or neo-Nazi groups. I'm not with them. So he's distanced himself from that. If Trump retweets a graphic that turns out is from a neo-Nazi source, maybe even he looks at that and goes, too far. I think that's too far. Or maybe it's one of the other trillion things that Trump did, like alluded to the fact that it's cool if you beat up protesters at his events. Maybe they had it coming. Maybe they were obnoxious and a little too loud. So who knows exactly what it is, but there you have it. A former KKK Grand Charmander is saying that Donald Trump is more extreme than him. Okay, now, we go to PolitiFact and give you guys a really interesting story on exactly who has the more hawkish foreign policy and just how similar they are. PolitiFact released an article comparing Obama's ISIS strategy to the Republican candidates, and shocker, they agree. They largely agree. So they say, quote, the 2016 candidates on the GOP side don't give that many specifics about their proposals to fight ISIS, and when they do, they largely follow the White House plan. So here are the differences. Supporting a no-fly zone, this is something that all of the Republicans except Rand Paul are in favor of, a no-fly zone in Syria. That would escalate to World War III with Russia, likely, because in order to do a no-fly zone, you would have to shoot down Russian planes. Bad idea. And you also need ground troops in order to do a no-fly zone. So, terrible idea through and through. In that sense, they're more hawkish than him. Also, they, to varying degrees, oppose accepting Syrian refugees, and they support using phrases like radical Islam, which is something that I actually agree with. I mean, I don't think the counter-argument is, well, you're generalizing if you do that. No, you're not. You're saying radical is the qualifier, radical Islam. So that's not generalizing. I'm actually with the conservatives on that, but I think a lot of liberals agree with that as well. But other than that, they all support the drone campaign, the separate airstrikes that are happening, the advisor boots on the ground, and the special forces boots on the ground. So the differences between the Republicans and Obama, not that much. Again, the right is a little worse, but this idea that, you know, you have two distinct parties with totally separate ideas on how to fight this problem, not really, no. Your choices are hawkish or more hawkish. You know, you don't have, there's nobody who across the board comes in and says, how about we take all of our troops out of the Middle East, and how about we only use our military to do self-defense, and that's the end of it. Nobody argues for that. Nobody. You know, I've advocated before on the show, like, okay, I'm fine with humanitarian aid and helping people out in their fight against ISIS, other Shia groups, other moderate Sunni groups, if they want to do that, fine. I'm in favor of if you want to get top ISIS people and you need U.S. Special Forces in order to get it done, I'm fine with that as well. But outside of that, unless there's a direct threat of violence against the U.S. and there's an imminent attack happening, I'm not for violence. The fact that nobody is advocating for that very basic position is insane. So your only choices are war or more war. You don't have any other choices. I mean, now, thankfully, with Bernie Sanders running, you have an option very similar to that. But when you look at the Democratic Party in general versus the Republican Party in general, it's soft imperialism or hard imperialism. So you have the Obama style, hey, we'll drone your family every once in a while, or you have, you know, Hillary Clinton style and Republican style, do a no-fly zone, perhaps more ground troops, and continue with the airstrikes and the drones. Why do they hate us, bro? I can't figure it out. Look, a lot of it is genuine religious lunacy and insanity, and they believe their doctrine and they act on it. But a lot of it is, as the CIA calls it, blowback, unintended consequences of an interventionist foreign policy, where you further radicalize people and they want retribution and revenge because of what you did to them. I would like to cut back on that aspect of it. Call me crazy. Okay. We're cruising here. Now we go to Ben Carson. Talk about his silliness. So Ben Carson sat down for an interview with the Washington Post, and he basically said, I'm not very good on foreign policy, am I? In fact, he got somewhat specific and said, I never should have said the Chinese are in Syria, should I? Yeah, Ben. No, you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have said that. That did make you look silly. You want to know why? Because you are silly. So I want to give you some of his quotes here. He said, as far as the China thing was concerned, I probably shouldn't have said that. I said that on the basis of some people in the CIA. No, you didn't. In fact, this was his counter-argument then when he was called out. He's like, don't get mad at me. I'm just telling you what my experts told me. So back off. And then when they said, the president has the best experts, and he says that's not true. He was like, well, I'm surprised that I have better experts than the White House does. No, you're just wrong. But at the time, he couldn't bring himself to say, okay, you got me. I was wrong on that one. My bad. I said the wrong place. I was trying to say, whatever, Russia, but I didn't. I said China. It was so embarrassing. It was so immensely embarrassing. He continues, but they made it seem like I'm saying there are a bunch of Chinese boots on the ground. Because you did say that. Well, everybody knows that Chinese have physical characteristics that would make them pretty easy to identify in a setting like that. Oh my God, Ben, stop talking. Oh my God, please. Shh. Take advice from my friend Dr. Evil. www.sh.com. Who says that? He's like, you know, the Chinese, they're in Syria, you know. Did I say that? I didn't say that. I shouldn't have said that. But I'm still saying that, even though I shouldn't have said that. And, I mean, if they were there, come on, we would have known, because they have distinct physical characteristics. You'd be able to spot them pretty easy. Know what I'm saying? Am I right? Am I right? Ben, back up off it. Back up off it. I could just imagine being the top campaign advisor, and you're just in the corner like, stop it! Stop saying shit! He says, that kind of stuff is frustrating. But it's something that I've learned. You continue to learn that everything you say is going to be dissected and used in a negative way, if possible. I'm learning. I wish I didn't have to learn that. See, this is his classic, just like his PC dodge that he uses all the time, more than any other candidate, and that's a very popular dodge on the right. He's trying to flip it back on you. Like, okay, whatever, I was incorrect, I back away from that, but not really, but I'm going to back away from it, even though I'm still saying that maybe it's true, but I'm just going to back away from it. But it's not me, it's you. You know, hey, when you say things and you're in the public spotlight, I'm the victim. I mean, everybody's picking apart everything I say, they're dissecting it, I don't want to have to learn that, but I guess I learned that because I'm the victim. No, you're not the victim. People are calling you out because you're wrong. You're incorrect. What you're saying is not true. It is inaccurate. It is false. This is people who give a shit about facts going, that ain't right, bitch. So for you to, again, with the political correctness thing, he always does it. He said it now at least 5 or 6 times. He said it in the debate multiple times. Anytime he gets caught stone cold busted saying something ridiculous, he's like, you know, we have to fight this culture of political correctness where you can't say anything without people saying, mah, 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 mah. No, it's not that you're being politically incorrect. It's that you're incorrect. And we call out you being incorrect, and then you just hide behind that as, so, I'm the victim, everybody's coming to get me because of political correctness. No, maybe you're being the politically correct one, because you're the one that's really trying to censor people when they call you out for your bullshit. Dude, you're just a joke. You have to step aside. You have to move along. This is just embarrassing at this point. I mean, this is a guy who, when he was asked on TV, hey, who would you bring along with us in the ISIS coalition who should lead the fight against ISIS? So, in other words, name any country in the Middle East. You literally could name any country. You want to know why? Because it's expected that the Sunni governments are moderate enough to want to fight ISIS, and the Shia governments, by definition, are against ISIS. He could have said any country. Any country. Hey, who should be with us in the ISIS coalition? Anybody! Say anybody! Say Jordan! Say Saudi Arabia! Say Lebanon! Say Iran! They're Shia, they're fighting them. He's like, you know, we should, it'd be great if we have the Arab and the non-Arab countries that fight. Again, his campaign advisor, wake me up from this nightmare. Ben, you had your moment in the sun. I'm going to need you to stop. Not just for our sake, but for your own, too. All right, now, let's move along to a very sad story, one I pains me to have to talk about with you guys today. Actually, I don't need that. Hold on. Let me just check here. You guys can't see the video, but we'll see it later on YouTube. Tamir Rice is a 12-year-old boy who was shot and killed in Cleveland by police when he was playing with his toy gun outside. The police showed up, they were responding to a 911 call, and they gunned him down within 2 seconds. So I want to rewatch the video here, and then we're going to come back and break it down, and I'm going to give you more information. All right, for everybody listening, it's a very quick video. The cops show up right now. He's just walking around the kid, and the guy gets out of the passenger seat, shoots him, and kills him. Immediately. Immediately. So like I said, it happened within 2 seconds. They pull up, they shoot. Pull up, shoot. Pull up, shoot. Pull up, shoot. It was no, you know, you would think, hey, if you're really concerned, your life might be threatened here, you're arriving on the scene. You would think, give a little distance, first of all, because you don't know, it's a dangerous situation. So pull up maybe 100 feet away. Pull up, stay on the road instead of driving to where they drove to. No, pull up, get out, shoot. Pull up, get out, shoot. Now, you know, you would think in police training that de-escalation tactics are taught where you don't immediately go nuclear. You try to calm down the situation. I mean, they have hostage negotiators where people have guns to the heads of kids, women, bank robbers, whatever. They have hostage negotiators who talk to people, try to talk them down off the ledge effectively. This is just show up, shoot. Show up, shoot within 2 seconds. So it's not even like, hey, there was a lag and, oh, weird movement. No, showed up, shot him. That's it. Even the driver was like, what the fuck just happened? I don't get this. By the way, his sister showed up a few minutes later. The officer tackled the sister. Coming to check if the brother's okay. Danger! I am threatened! Attack! That's the only mode they have, apparently. So yesterday we learned there will be no charges against the officer. I need you to fully understand this. This isn't just he went to court, he went on trial, he was found not guilty after a proceeding. No, this is there will be no charges against him. Didn't even go through the process. So when people say, hey, let the justice system decide, and then it is what it is. No, but that didn't even happen. That didn't even happen. It wasn't like we had the trial, hey, he was not guilty. No. Didn't even get to a trial. They didn't even do a trial. No charges. So it was a grand jury proceeding at Cuyahoga County, and prosecutor Timothy J. McGinty threw the case, and he failed to get an indictment. Guys, you can indict anybody for anything. All you need to do for an indictment is present the case against the officer. That's it. There is no give the defense side as well in the indictment process. That happens during the trial. But he didn't want it to get to trial, so you know what he did in the indictment process when he's supposed to be presenting the evidence against the officer? He presented all the evidence in favor of the officer and didn't do any defense. And didn't do any defense, I should say, of Tamir Rice. This is unbelievable. They're flaunting it, how corrupt they are, and how much they don't care about crime if it's committed by an officer. They're flaunting it. It's in your face. No, but see, the thing is, and this is why the story is so important, the thing is, it's not a debate anymore. Because oftentimes you'll have debates with people, and they'll say, well, you got to trust the process and trust the system, and it is what it is, even if you don't agree with what happens at the end. At least there was this thing and, you know, due process, and we went along, and then you learn what the result is, and hey, it is what it is, so you win some, you lose some. But that, again, that's not even a tenable position given the facts, because we know the facts, and the facts are, didn't even get to trial, they didn't get an indictment, they threw the case on purpose. Now, let me ask you, that's your kid. Are you okay with it? That's your kid. Just imagine we live in bizarro land and that is your kid. That is your kid. Are you okay with it? Are you okay with it? I don't think anybody who's an honest person would say, yes, of course. If it's my kid and that happens, what are you going to do? Don't even have a trial. Let the officer get off. The officer who killed Tamir Rice is a guy named Timothy Lohman. He was fired from a previous police job for being mentally unstable. Didn't even have a trial. No trial here. He had a mental breakdown while he was at a shooting range holding a gun. Apparently his girlfriend broke up with him. He couldn't take it. And he snapped. This is a guy who was hired by a different police department. And then when he does something that some would have said beforehand, hey, you might go crazy and do some shit like that, they go, oh, well, now we're just going to, you know, do no justice continuously. In the 911 call that they were responding to, he was told that the gun Tamir Rice was playing with was, quote, probably fake. Showed up within 2 seconds, gunned him down and killed him. You couldn't get a fiction writer to put on paper a clear case where the cop did something wrong and there should be justice done, there should be punishment, there should be jail time. You couldn't put it on paper any better. All the evidence is there. The 911 caller said, easy. The gun is probably fake. Showed up, killed him within 2 seconds. This is not a person who was fit to do what they were doing. This is not an action that is defensible by any stretch of the imagination. I don't care how, you know, much you're embedded politically on one side or the other, or how much you're entrenched in the cops are always right or whatever. If you can't see the facts of this case and say there's something deeply wrong with the system, the problem is you. Let me take a break. When we come back, we're going to get to Fox Business host Charles Payne, who weighed in on the Tamir Rice case and made it worse. And by the way, let me just throw out one more thing here. What you need to do in order to make it so we have a shot at justice, you have to have special prosecutors in situations like this. You can't have the prosecutor be friends with the officers, as was the case here, because they work with them all the time. This is what everybody needs to get. There's an embedded conflict of interest, because the prosecutors work with the cops all the time. So they're going to look out for their buddies, even if they do something horrific like murder a 12-year-old. So what do? You have special prosecutors. You put aside the person as a conflict of interest, and then you bring the person to justice. You have an independent outside force, investigative force and prosecutor, come in there and say, okay, now we're going to really get justice here. That's the answer for the corrupt system and the way it functions right now. It's not going to change unless and until we make a move in that direction, until we implement that policy. If we don't implement that policy, this is going to happen time and time and time again. All right, sorry, one more. Wrong. I don't have time. Like I said, after the break, Charles Payne, Fox Business host, speaks about this. Then I will get into how ISIS treats their sex slaves, because, you know, you got to be moral about how you treat them. And a crazy Arizona lady kills somebody and then makes the body a shrine to God because morality. All right, stay right there, guys. Done yet with the very serious issue of Tamir Rice. I got to go to Fox Business host Charles Payne, who's a guy that comes up maybe once every 2 months, and we mock him. That's what we do, because he earned it. All right. Fox Business host Charles Payne weighed in on the Tamir Rice case with his panel, and they said silly things.
Today we had the Tamir Rice situation where no charges were filed, right. And then over the weekend in Chicago, a 55-year-old woman was shot and killed by the police accidentally, as well as a teenager who apparently was mentally disturbed. How can we get through these things that are going to happen? I mean, you know, you're simply going to have these incidents happen and still be able to let the police do their jobs without any kind of real serious ridicule or sort of things like Black Lives Matter, because it feels like it's catch-22 right now.
Well, it does, Charles, and it's unfortunate what happened. I mean, that situation in Cleveland was clearly a training issue. You had a police officer that really should not have even been on the force. But, you know, going forward, when we look at Ferguson, when we look at Baltimore, you know, we have to do a better job at supporting our police, and we have to get these politicians out of the way. Look at Rahm Emanuel. You want to know what's wrong in Chicago? Just simply take a look at Rahm Emanuel. You want to know what's wrong in look at de Blasio. I mean, we have to get these politicians out of the way, Charles. Let cops do their jobs. Communities and policing need to come together. I think we can do it, but we have to do it with real leadership. And the real leadership, Charles, is going to have to start at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
He somehow connected that to Obama at the end. I don't even know how that's possible. What are you saying? That was just word salad. Something, something, I don't know. Leadership starts with Obama. Fucking Obama. He's got nothing to do with this. I go after Obama all the time when he does shit that's wrong. Everybody knows that. I get shit for it oftentimes. But this has nothing to do with him. He's like, Obama leadership, enough said. No, not enough said. That's ridiculous. And then also, I mean, look at these little gems here. They throw out these, this, you know, red meat to the conservative base in the most absurd ways. Support our police. Hey, gotta let them do their job. The problem is, what happens when they do something wrong? What happens when they become the criminals? What do we do then? Well, these guys have an answer. Support the cops. Gotta untie the politicians from controlling them. Yeah, you know, that's the problem. The problem is they have too much leeway. You know, you need to get more freedom to maybe kill some more people. That's what's happening. I don't, like, they can't help but revert back to their talking points. And they're, at the beginning, the guest made some decent points. He said, well, you know, the training is the issue. True, true, so let's address that. He goes, you know, this guy shouldn't have been on the force anyway. True, so let's address that. But then, no, he takes the two decent points, promptly crumples them up, throws them in the garbage, and then goes on to, gotta support our police and let them do their jobs and untether the politicians from controlling them. No, but that's the opposite point of the two somewhat reasonable things you said. If the issue is the training, finish the thought. What's the logical conclusion? Okay, redo the training. De-escalation tactics should be at the top of the list. The top of the list. Hey, this guy shouldn't have been on the force. Okay, so say we need more regulation and new standards to prevent people who were previously fired from police jobs for being mentally unstable from getting police jobs again. That's what happened with this guy. He had a mental breakdown at a shooting range because his girlfriend broke up with him, and this is the cop that ended up killing Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old carrying a toy gun. Finish the thought. He makes two decent points, then goes right to the opposite points. Support the cops. Let them do what they want. And then fucking Charles Payne, quote, let the police do their jobs. I don't know how anybody could watch what happened with Tamir Rice, and that's the thought that comes to mind. The thought that comes to mind should be, okay, something's wrong. Something's wrong. That guy did that, killed a 12-year-old within 2 seconds. When the 911 call, they said, it's probably a fake gun. Showed up, killed him within 2 seconds, and his gut instinct is protect the cops. Let the police do their jobs. What about the fucking citizens? What about, who are they supposed to protect and serve? The citizens. You can't have an armed police force that becomes the criminals, and then when they do a criminal act, no accountability. They're above the law. No justice. And that's what happened here with Tamir Rice. You have an officer who's guilty, who did it, not even an indictment. It's not even like it went to trial and then, hey, not guilty. No, not even an indictment. Didn't even get to trial. So they threw the case. They threw the case because the prosecutor knows the cops and is buddy-buddy with the cops. You need special prosecutors in these instances, and your gut instinct shouldn't be protect the cops. Your gut instinct should be, hey, justice, no matter what. When there's a problem in the other direction and some crazy armed person kills a police officer, I want justice in that case. I want justice. I'm not just, you know, team anti-cop. No, if there's injustice done against a cop, of course I want justice. But by the same token, when you flip the script, I don't want to let the cops get away with it. I don't say shit like, let the police do their jobs after a police officer killed a 12-year-old who had a fake gun. That's your gut response? That's beyond sickening. All right, now we go to ISIS. Oh, here we go. ISIS slavery documents were discovered, and they get into tremendous detail as to how you're supposed to treat your sex slaves. So let me give you the slave rules, because, you know, having slaves, totally moral. But if you do the wrong thing with your slaves, immoral. Come on, we're not animals here. I mean, what do you think, we're bad people? No, we tell you to treat your slaves right. So let me give you some of the rules. No sex when she's on her period. Gotta stay classy with your slaves. No sex when she's pregnant. You can't give her an abortion. And you can't fuck sisters. This is another one. Let me give you the literal text of one of these. Quote, if the owner of a female captive who has a daughter suitable for intercourse has sexual relations with the latter, he is not permitted to have intercourse with her mother, and she is permanently off limits to him. She should have intercourse with her mother. Should he have intercourse with her mother, then he is not permitted to have intercourse with her daughter, and she is to be off limits to him. This is ISIS explaining in detail their code of morality. No, but isn't that unbelievable? Because they believe, like, slavery, totally cool. Sex slavery, totally, totally cool. But God forbid you have sex with, like, a mother and the daughter? Ugh. I mean, punishment's coming your way, buddy, let me tell you. Okay. I believe the real moral ladder here, if we want to have this conversation, is somebody having sex with a mother and a daughter, that's like a porn movie. Slaves, horrific. Sex slaves, horrific, horrific. But they flip it. They're like, seen in a porn movie? Nope, that's immoral. Sex slaves, rock on. This is, I mean, it sounds so ridiculous to say it, but man, ISIS is fucked up, aren't they? Yeah, obviously. So where do they get it from? Because that's the next question. Well, they say, what? You can't get mad at me, dude. I'm just doing what's the higher calling. I'm listening to Almighty God. I'm listening to Allah. This is me and my religion. This is Islam. This is what I believe. To give some theological backing here, 23 lines 1 to 6 focuses on who you can have sex with, and it says wives and slaves. 424 says, quote, all women are forbidden except you rightfully possess who are your wives and those who you own. So again, owning women. There's also the concept of malakat aymanukum. I know I mispronounced that, which means female slave. And these are women whose husbands are dead in a war against Islam, and you're allowed to take them as slaves. And in fact, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, he also takes the wives of ISIS fighters. So not just like the enemies who you're fighting, and then, you know, you go and steal the wives of Shia who you kill, or moderate Sunnis who you kill. No, he does this to other ISIS fighters too. He's like, okay, you need to go do a suicide bombing because, yeah, it's the right thing to do. And then he goes and fucks their wife. So they have theological backing for their actions. And, it probably varies where some people are just exploiting the backwards ideology for power reasons, like we know with the former Ba'athists in Iraq who teamed up with ISIS just to fight back against the Shias, and they were going to try to ride their way back to power by using them as, you know, to do a lot of the dirty work and do a lot of the fighting with them. So some are probably exploiting it, and they're doing it for power reasons and a plethora of reasons. But make no mistake about it, there are many, if not most, of the people in the group will tell you, no, I don't know what you mean. Yeah, sex slaves. Totally. That's totally allowed. That's God. That's morality. I'm just following what it says for me to do. So the point that we need to make, now, look, if you're a liberal Muslim or a moderate Muslim or whatever, or a secular Muslim, whatever, you know, you can use the argument, as many Muslim scholars have made against ISIS, where they say, no, you're wrong theologically, and here's why. And they come with a waterfall of reasons and rationalizations where they say, no, no, you're missing it. When they talk about that in the Quran, it's contextual, and they only mean at the time, and Islam was more progressive at the time because everybody was doing slavery and we were better, yada, yada, yada. So if you want to make that argument, by all means, I'm not going to kneecap you, go right ahead. But coming from me, somebody who's an agnostic atheist, the argument I'm going to make is perhaps you shouldn't believe in this because it's wrong, because it's not true. And this is apart from simply being immoral and unethical and making you a bad person, because your actions define who you are, and those are immoral actions. But if you're using as your paradigm, as your framework, religion and Islam in order to do this, well, that's not true. You're taking this information and this command to have sex slaves and treat them a certain way, you're taking it from the same book, where if you interpret it literally as they say they're doing, well, that means there's bright yellow cows that existed. Was this written by God or Dr. Seuss? Please, explain to me in detail. There's a flying donkey that Muhammad rides on. A lot of people misinterpret that, where they say, it's a flying horse. No, I've spoken to former Islamists who are like, actually, if you want the most literal terminology they use, it was donkey. That's your God? Your God is flying around on a fucking winged donkey? That God's a bitch. Of all the animals to pick, donkey. Let's go with donkey. Let's go with the one that's guaranteed to make people laugh when they look at it. Oh, so sad. I didn't know some of these things, man. The more you learn, the more you know. Always fascinating. There's talking feet in the Quran. That's where I go for my morality. The book that has talking feet. You know what's so sad about that? It's like they're trying to be creative, but they're just not that creative. So they're like, talking feet. Let's go with that one. That'll make people go, ooh, amazing. Another one of my new favorite ones. It says that semen is created in your backbone. Okay, we have this thing called science, and we know that that is not true. So if you say, hey, I'm a literalist, this is the inerrant, infallible, perfect word of God, I say to you, oh, you're wrong. Sorry, I respect you enough to look you in the eyes and tell you, man to man, you're incorrect. Sorry. Now, if your response to that is, I will now kill you because you dared say that, well, then I think I know who won the argument. I think I know who won the debate, because I don't have to revert to, let me kill this guy because he disagrees with me, because I'm right. You, on the other hand, you're wrong, so what do? I must kill you for saying things that are factually true and obvious. And I'll give you a few more here. We've mentioned these before. It says that Jews become apes. It says Christians become pigs. And also, evolution, not true. But given enough time, a Jew becomes an ape. Obviously, hashtag science. And in the Hadith, this is a separate one, but, you know, it says women are mentally deficient. So, yeah. Bottom line is, if you're somebody who believes in this literally, so you're okay with slaves and sex slaves, and then, you know, you're combing through the Quran and the Hadith for commands, and you're having fundamentalist, literalist scholars pen stuff like, hey, you can only fuck this slave, but not that slave. Oh, that's morality. If you believe that, you're silly, you're stupid, you're wrong, and not only does the overwhelming majority of the Muslim world disagree with you and say, look, you're just simply interpreting that wrong, and that's not true, but also, anybody who looks at this stuff with a skeptical eye and looks for truth and cares about logic and facts, you'll walk away going, oh, it's all bullshit, just like all the other religions. It's not true. It's a holy book that's based on myths, and you clowns were stupid enough to fall for it and try to literally implement it. Okay. All right, I got to give you more now. more religious lunacy, this time Christians. An Arizona woman told police that she committed murder because the victim didn't believe in God. So, Raw Story reports on this. Quote, Phoenix officers were called to the home of 39-year-old Anitra Braxton on December 26th and discovered a body on her couch covered in a towel. During an interview at police headquarters, Braxton explained that the victim did not believe in God, so she shot her in the eye. She then kept the victim's body on her couch for 3 days, calling it a shrine from God. Now, the victim was also pregnant. This gets worse and worse. And we don't even know anything about the name of the victim at this point. We don't know any further details about what went into this and exactly how it unfolded and if they knew each other and all that stuff. But based on the facts we have so far, my conservative side is coming out. I try to fight it, try to hold it back, but no, you got to put this person in jail, lock them up, throw away the key. This is insanity. And some people will say, hey, it's just a crazy person, what are you going to do? I don't care, you still lock that person up forever, you can't risk this again. But furthermore, is it fair to just say it's a crazy person? The person who committed the crime is telling you, I did it because God. I heard voices in my head from God who said, kill this person because they don't believe in God. And the moral thing to do, the just thing to do, the right thing to do, is to make a shrine to God after you kill the person. There's an old saying that goes something like this. For good people to do bad things, it takes religion. Because what other conceivable reason would there be for an otherwise peaceful person to believe it's the right thing to do to kill somebody who doesn't believe like you? You need a framework and a paradigm and a structure of belief that supports that idea. What is that framework? What is that paradigm? What is that structure? It's a religious structure. Whether it's Christian or whether it's Muslim or whether it's Jewish extremists like we see in doing settlements in Palestinian territory, or whether it's, you know, Hindu extremists like we see with some factions of Modi's party where they kill Muslims because they dare to maybe eat beef sometimes. Otherwise good person to do a bad thing, all it takes is brainwashing into something like this, and then they go, no, that's the right thing to do. So, and that's a very important distinction. You got to remember this, guys, because that's different from, I know it's wrong, but I did it. And that happens with a lot of crimes where people say, if it's not terrorism, if it's not religious in nature, they go, okay, a lot of people, I know it's wrong, I feel it's wrong, but I did it. So they try to hide it or whatever. This is a person who did it, put a shrine to God, made the dead person a shrine, and then told officers, like, no, that, yeah. Hello, they didn't believe in God. What am I going to do? That's what I have to do. Okay, but you are simply wrong if you believe that. How many times can I say this? I feel like it's every day we fucking go over this. Now, again, some people say, well, that it could just be that this person's crazy. Yeah, sometimes there are people who are crazy people who are, like, quite literally hallucinating and hearing voices in their head and they're psychotic and they do something and then they just bring up God and they use that as a justification when in reality they're crazy. But there also are cases of people who are not fucking crazy and they really believe this belief that was downloaded into their head and they act on it and then they look at you like you're the crazy one. If you're told, and I know nothing about her background or anything, but if you're told from day one until you're however old that this is the right thing to do, these are the bad people, you're right, you're correct by definition, you're in the in-group, you got God on your side, you got to act because I say so, well then you're going to do it. And of course, the tragic irony of that and is that it's not true, and you're the one that's acting in an immoral way as you think you're being the most moral. And, you know, I just want justice. This is something where I just want justice because as long as she's not an officer, we might get it. I'm sorry, I had to throw in the Tamir Rice jab there, because the officer getting off with that was terrible. But there you have it, man. Somebody, imagine what goes on inside that person's head to commit a murder and then say, no, I did it because God's on my side, and now I'm going to enshrine the body. All right, now let's go to another crazy Christian. This one not as bad, even though he's terrible. Colorado pastor Kevin Swanson is a guy who had Republican presidential candidates... Sorry, let me try that again. Pastor Kevin Swanson from Colorado is a guy who had Republican presidential candidates attend an event to share a stage with him and discuss religion and other issues. And, of course, he's absolutely out of his mind. He's in favor of the death penalty for gay people. We've covered that on the show. He even said that at an event where other Republican candidates were. Like, they were at the event, and he's talking about killing gays. He also wants America to repent for Harry Potter. That's a very, very high level achieved of crazy. And he's still respected on the right, and they still visit his... you know, his show, he has a radio show. There's another guy, I think it's in Iowa, I forget his name, Jan Mikkelsen maybe it is, who said, what's the matter with slavery? What's wrong with slavery? These guys all visit his shows too. So they've taken the fringe and they're like, let's try to mainstream it. Very scary stuff. Well, today we learned that he went after Hillary Clinton, and he did it in a hilarious way. So on his radio show he said, Hillary Clinton will lead tremendous majorities of American kids down the track towards homosexuality. If America fails to repent, why wouldn't Hillary Clinton get full reign upon this nation to continue the destructive pattern, destroy the social fabric of the nation so that there will be 75% of kids born outside of wedlock to single mothers by the year 2030? So to be sure that tremendous majorities of American kids are taken down the track towards homosexuality, towards the destruction of sexuality with pornography habits and illegitimate divorce. Okay, he's serious. He's spoken about we should kill the gays and repent for Harry Potter. And now he's like, if we vote for Hillary Clinton, all the kids will go gay. You can't have that. And she'll endorse pornography. What does that mean? What are you saying? Is Hillary Clinton going to give a speech from the Oval Office and say, my fellow Americans, I would like to mention today that we are now mandating that every child below the age of 12 will be forced to have same-sex relations. Little Timmy, get ready to blow Donnie. The destruction of sexuality with pornography habits, that's what she's going to push for. Really? I just can't imagine Hillary Clinton mentioning in any context, you know, maybe you guys should check out MILF porn. Who's into cream pies? Let me see a show of hands. That's not going to happen. That's all in your head. But he really believes this is what he thinks about. Compare this to people on the left, even people we don't like, even somebody like Hillary Clinton, who's deeply corrupt and has a million and one problems, her foreign policy is terrible. But the conversation on the left is about economics, is about social safety nets, is about civil liberties and human rights and authoritarian government and all these things, militarism. This, on the far right, they're like, the kids are going to go gay because of Hillary. Run and hide. Be afraid. Look at this maniac. Hillary's going to turn kids gay and promote porn. No, in reality, what's going on here? It's projection, and he struggles with sexuality issues. So he blames the left and looks for other people to blame. He's always talking about gay people. Kill gays, this, that. He views it as a temptation that others give into, and he's mad at them for not showing the moral strength to not give into it. So he looks at gay people who are acting out on it, and he's like, I'm so jealous. I mean, no, you're immoral. Kill the gays. Gays are bad. All the kids are going to go gay because of Hillary. No, we don't all have – like, it's not like, you know, given – to certain opportunities or given the right set of circumstances, I'd wake up and go, you know, I really want to suck a dick today. No, I don't want to suck a dick. But this guy, he can't fathom thinking like that. He thinks like, no, of course, with the wrong leadership, and kids are all going to want to have same-sex relations. I know, I want it. That's what's really going on in his mind. All right, and finally, let me do one more here. Think Progress is reporting that two seniors at Bolivar Central High School in Bolivar, Tennessee, were arrested for wearing sagging pants to school, and they spent 48 hours in jail. This is unbelievable. They say, quote, a school resource officer brought attention to the students' wardrobe choices, and the students were charged with indecent exposure. Although four seniors were charged for indecent exposure over 2 weeks in November, only two students spent time in jail. At least one of the students has to pay $250 in court fees and fines. So you hear that, I hear that, and our gut reaction is to say, well, that's outrageous, but it's also rare. Turns out that's not true. They explain, quote, it isn't uncommon for cities to criminalize people for wearing sagging pants and for schools to lend a helping hand. In September, a black college student who attended Hinds Community College in Mississippi was stopped by a campus police officer who said his pants violated the college dress code. When the student refused to show his ID, he was arrested for a failure to comply, which means he could receive up to 6 months in prison and a $500 fine. They continue. A Dadeville, Alabama city councilor named Frank Goodman received national attention earlier this year for proposing an ordinance prohibiting anyone from wearing sagging pants as well as whatever dresses and shorts the city council deemed too short. Goodman said his motivation was partly religious, declaring that God would never wear saggy pants. Anyone breaking the ordinance would have to pay a penalty of up to $500 and spend 60 days in jail. Look at the massive, precious irony here. The same people pushing for these laws are the same people that then turn around and say, I believe in small government. I believe in freedom. I believe in liberty. I believe in small government, small government, small government. Unless it's those goddamn dirty thug blacks who wear their pants low, lock them up for that. Because any excuse to lock them up, smoke weed, do drugs, something like that, lock them up. Saggy pants, lock them up, because they ain't like me. They're the other. Big government is for punishing them. I get to have small government and freedom. And also, I get to shove my God down your throat, even if you don't believe in God, or even if you don't believe in my interpretation of my God. No, they're wrong on every point about this. On every point. Look, even if you're against it because you think it's not classy or whatever, that's fine. Somebody up for acting in a way that you view as not classy. What happens if you overhear somebody in public burping or farting or using a curse word? Oh, my goodness! Oh, you've offended my sensibilities! Lock them up! Why don't you go back to the Puritan days where you fucking belong?